Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Liberty Talk Radio, America's libertarian voice and independent streaming internet radio station, broadcasting 24 hours a day, 7 days a week from our studio in Tulsa, Oklahoma to around the world. I'm your host, Joe Cristiano, and this is your antidote to popular talk radio. This broadcast is being brought to you live on October 15th, 2009. It is now 6:31 a.m. Central Daylight Time in the good old USA. Folks, it's time for us to take back control of our government now before this bureaucratic, oversized, and self-serving federal government starves us of our property, our freedom, our rights, and our liberty. To do this, we must shed conventional thinking regarding our political structure. We need to do revolutionaries in thought, dissidents in action. Only after we recognize what our government is doing to our freedom and our Constitution will we start taking it back. And this program is just about that. Well, good morning, everyone. I encourage everyone here to get educated on economic issues. Go to Andy Sutton's website, mytwocentsonline.com. In fact, that's changed, folks. I know I've been advocating that website to you. He's actually changed it. It's now sutton-associates.com. But if you go to mytwocentsonline.com, it'll automatically bring you over for those people who've heard me before. And that two is a numeric two, by the way. In his weekly newsletter, Andy discusses economic issues, how they affect you. You can also listen to Andy's commentary on contraryinvestorscafe.com. Lastly, I would like to remind our listeners to subscribe to our reminder service by visiting our website and clicking on the subscribe icon. Folks, this morning, please call in. We have 5 open lines. I know it's early in the morning. Please do call in with any questions. It's always open mic night, so to speak. Call 646-652-4620. That's 646-652-4620. Of course, you can email us anytime. comments@libertytalkradio.com. That's comments@libertytalkradio.com. Well, let's see. Where are we? We have tons of emails that we really haven't gone through, and I'd like to go through a few of them this morning very quickly. There's one that someone sent me. It's a picture of Hitler, Castro, Gaddafi, Stalin, Idi Amin, Mao Tse-tung, Pol Pot, and Kim Jong-il. And it says, "These experts agree gun control works." I thought that was kind of neat. And I do have a sign on my studio wall that says, "Free people own guns, slaves don't." Remember that. Remember that. And remember a couple of weeks ago, I read you an email from an angry woman who said, you know, when Obama goes out, he has the Secret Service all carrying, you know, automatic weapons. Everyone's guarding him like crazy, guns all over the place, you know, helicopters. But when she goes out with her children, the government doesn't want her to own a gun to protect herself. Think about that. Now, what's good for her, remember, the government works for us. It's of, for, and by the people. But the government gets the guns and we don't. Just think of that. I mean, just think of that concept alone. They get the guns, or then we don't, or they tell us when we can own a gun. Of course, for our own protection. Well, the government owns the guns, and they send our men and women overseas to get killed. That is not for our protection, folks. Oh, yes, it's to protect us from Al-Qaeda and all that. And I'm going to get into a little bit this morning, just a little bit. Because I do want to move on to our main subject. Here's another email. It says there's a group of elderly people sitting around. It says, let me get this straight. Oh, it says, on the bright side of things, we can expect really long delays before they euthanize us. Healthcare reform, scare tactics, it says. Now, it says, let's get this straight. We're going to pass a healthcare plan written by a committee whose head says he doesn't understand it, passed by a Congress that hasn't read it but exempts themselves from it, signed by a president who also hasn't read it and who smokes, with funds administered by a Treasury chief who didn't pay his taxes, overseen by a Surgeon General who is obese and financed by a country that's nearly broke. What possibly can go wrong? Isn't that beautiful? That says it all, folks. That's going up my studio wall. That says it all. Here, this is one that's from Todd, and he's a regular contributor to my email, always sending me stuff. Todd, thank you very much. Todd from Houston. And it's a picture of a child standing there, just a typical kid, real young kid, maybe 1 or 2 years old, and with a pacifier in his mouth looking at the camera. And he has a sign on it, and sign on her, and it says, "I'm already $38,375 in debt, and I only own a dollhouse." Isn't that precious? And isn't that correct? Is that not correct? Here's one from Andy. Andy writes, "Good podcast on Who Do You Hate and Iran. I had the opportunity to meet several Persians, when we lived in the Middle East. I've invariably found them to be warm and friendly folks with little relation to the evil being caricatures that the media government likes to portray. I think that all saw that foreigners like Americans, but don't much care for our government policies is quite valid. Regards, Andy." Andy, thank you very much. Send me your mailing address and your T-shirt size, and I'll send you a Liberty Talk Radio T-shirt for that. Now, here's one from Henry. Now, this one's interesting. I don't know how accurate it is, but I have a suspicion it is somewhat accurate. It says, "Professor Joseph Olson," this is from Henry, "Professor Joseph Olson of Hemline University School of Law, St. Paul, Minnesota, points out some interesting facts concerning the presidential election." Now listen to this. This is very, very interesting. "Number of states won by the Democrats, 19. The number by the Republicans, 29. Square miles of land owned by the Democrats, 580,000. Republicans, 2,427,000. Population of the counties won by Democrats, 127 million. Republicans, 143 million. Murder rate per 100,000 residents in counties won by Democrats, 13.2. That's 13.2 murders per 100,000 people. In the Republican area, 2.1. That's over 6 times higher in the Democrat. Now, the reason being, it's mostly the urban areas, right? And in those places like New York and Chicago, they don't allow people to own guns again. Professor Olson adds, "In aggregate, the map of the territory Republicans won was mostly the land owned by tax-paying citizens of the country." Now, folks, you know I'm not a Republican, so I'm not boosting their position at all. "Democrat territory mostly encompassed those citizens living in government-owned tenements and living off various forms of government welfare. Olson believes the United States is somewhere between the complacency and apathy phase of Professor Tyler's definition of democracy, with some 40% of the nation's population already having reached the governmental dependency stage." I knew it was around 40%, but I this is the first time that I've read it again. 40% of the people are dependent on the government. Now, folks, we are in deep trouble. "If Congress grants amnesty and citizenship to 20 million criminal invaders called illegals and they vote, then we can say goodbye to the United States in fewer than 5 years. If you are in favor of this, then by all means, delete this message. If you are not, then pass it along to help everyone realize just how much is at stake, knowing that apathy is the greatest danger to our freedom." A lot of good points in there, except I don't agree with the illegal stuff. Now, this is from John. John's from Tulsa. And this was particularly interesting because what it did is it compared 1909 with 2009. And I'll just read you a few things. And these things were fascinating. Of course, it talked about the price of fuel. 14% of the homes had a bathtub. 8% of the homes had a telephone, only 8%. There were only 8,000 cars with only 144 miles of paved roads. 144 miles of paved road. Many of us drive more than that every day. The maximum speed limit in most cities was 10 miles an hour. The tallest structure in the world was the Eiffel Tower. The average wage, listen to this, folks, in 1909 was 22 cents an hour. We throw 22 cents away. It's not even worth picking up or taking as change anymore. The average worker made between $200 and $400 per year. A competent accountant could expect $2,000 a year, a dentist $2,500 a year, veterinarian $1,500 and $4,000 per year, and a mechanical engineer about $5,000 per year. More than 95% of all births took place at home. 90% of all doctors had no college education. Sugar costs 4 cents a pound, eggs 14, coffee 15. Most women only wash their hair once a month and use borax or egg yolk for shampoo. Canada passed a law that prohibited poor people from entering into their country for any reason. I love that. It's beautiful. Five leading causes of death were pneumonia and influenza, tuberculosis, diarrhea, heart disease, and stroke. Heart disease and stroke were way down there. Wow, four or five. The American flag had 45 stars. The population of Las Vegas was only 30. Crossword puzzles, canned beer, and iced tea hadn't been invented yet. There was no Mother's Day, no Father's Day. Two out of every 10 adults couldn't read or write. Only 6% of Americans had graduated high school. Marijuana, heroin, morphine were all available over the counter at your local drugstore. Back then, pharmacists said, heroin clears the complexion, gives buoyancy to the mind, and regulates the stomach and bowels, and is, in fact, the perfect guardian of health. 18% of the household had at least one full-time servant or domestic help. There were about 230 reported murders in the entire United States, plus one more sad thought, 95% of the taxes we have now did not exist in 1909. 95%. I am now going to forward this to someone else without typing it myself. From there, it will be sent to others all over the world, all in a matter of seconds. Staggering. Try it. Try to imagine what it may be like in another 100 years. It staggers the mind. I thought that was an excellent. I'm sorry for taking so much time out, but that was excellent. Folks, one other thing before we get our main program. You know, I had an occasion to speak to, you know, intelligent guy, obviously. He worked for a major company, financial house, and he called me about my investments and wanted me to change things and whatever. You know, they all scream when they find out that I'm in commodities and they get all upset. But we got to talking for a while. He was a real nice fella. And he had mentioned that his son was going to be deployed to Iran. To Afghanistan. And, you know, he was proud of him and all that. And I said, yeah, I said, I wish him well and the whole bit. I said, it's a shame that we're going over there. And I said, you know, that we, you know, have to fight with a war without end. And he says, well, better we fight them there than we fight them here. And that sort of just clicked at me. And I said, well, this is what I should have said. And whenever someone brings up the war in Afghanistan, this is what we should say. You say, oh, Al-Qaeda. That's right. They mentioned Al-Qaeda and the Taliban. You say, you know, I really don't know who Al-Qaeda and Taliban are. I mean, I just have no idea what they're referring to. I said, maybe you can help me out. How many aircraft carriers does the Al-Qaeda or the Taliban have? You know, the answer is going to be, well, they don't have any, you know, they don't have any aircraft carriers. They don't have any of those things. You know, we got a whole fleet of those things. Okay, well, what size is their Navy? How many destroyers do they have? How many tin cans do they have? You know, what's the size of their scope of their Navy? Well, they don't have any Navy, you know. And then you can ask the next question. Say, all right, well, what about their Air Force? How many airplanes, how many bombers do they have? I mean, do they have stealth bombers or regular bombers? What size are their loads? Do you have any idea? They don't have any bombers. Well, what about their fighter planes? What type of fighter planes are they using? Are they using sort of makeups of ours or Russians or Chinese or Japanese or whatever? What kind of fighter jets do they have? Well, they don't have any fighter jets. Well, okay, what about their ground armament? What kind of are they using Abrams tanks or A1s? Are they using Russian tanks? Tanks made in China? What kind of tanks do they have? Well, they don't have any tanks. What kind of artillery do they use? I mean, they have long range, 50 millimeter guns. What kind? Well, they have no artillery. And then you got to bring yourself to the point. You say, now wait a minute. We send out troops halfway around the world. Let me see if I get this straight now. We bring out troops halfway around the world to fight a war in some mountainous area that no one's ever been able to succeed in any way, shape, or form. That was an enemy, so to speak. We are the most powerful nation in the world militarily. We spend more money on the military than the entire world combined. And we are fighting an army that we cannot identify, cannot describe, that has no navy, no air force, no artillery. Where am I wrong? What passed by that I missed just now? What just happened? Did something happen to my brain that it skipped and I missed like 10 years or 20 years of life and everyone else went by and I was oblivious to what was going on? Now, folks, does that make any sense? You know, when I ask my listeners, I said, just look at the picture and ask yourself, what's wrong with this picture? I just painted a picture for you. We are fighting a non-describable, or indescribable, I should say, indescribable enemy that we cannot even define, doesn't even wear uniforms, wears sandals or on bare feet in a mountain region halfway around the world. By the way, I think on the Russian border, of all places, and on the border of Iran, which they never mention. They never mention Afghanistan is on the border of Iran, and Iraq on the other side is on the border of Iran, and we are fighting wars. We are occupying two nations on both sides of Iran. Wouldn't that make you feel comfortable if you lived in Iran? And we're bombing the hell out of those places. Wouldn't that make you feel warm and cozy? Wouldn't you love the Americans? And we want to know why people come over here and fly airplanes into our buildings. Frustration! You ever hear that before? They have no way of fighting back. They have no navy. They have no army. They have no air force. They have nothing! We have everything and we're bombing the hell out of them. Now someone has got to write me an email. Someone's got to call me and tell me, this is where you have it wrong, Joe. If we don't kill them, they'll kill us. And then when they say them, I say, who's them? Who is them? They are the citizens of a country trying to protect their own land, their own way of living, their own culture. Folks, if the situation was reversed, we'd be worse than them. We'd be Al-Qaeda squared. We'd be Taliban cubed. There wouldn't be a bomb going off every, 2 weeks. It'd be every day. We'd mass produce the damn things. Now we put it on our backs. We have little robots doing it for us. I just don't understand that. I just don't understand that. It gets me so mad I can't see straight. Anyway, the topic of this program, which we have about 10 minutes left, is home economics. You know, we talk about all the problems that the United States has. And the politicians use the collective word of we. I read an article about this. This is fascinating. In the Freeman magazine, by the sponsored by the Freedom Future, the Freedom of Economic, the Foundation of Economic Education. And you should subscribe to that. It's fantastic. The problem is we have this collective we. We are always we, you know. We need to do this. No, I need to do this. You need to do this. They never say you, I. It's always we. And we can never, like, we cannot identify the Taliban. We cannot identify the Al-Qaeda. But we can identify them if they're our enemy. We can't even identify the we. Who the hell is we? When you have people almost riding in the streets that we hate our government, we hate our former, we hate the people in our government, what they're doing to our Constitution, we don't want them to do anything. And they say, we have to do something. No, leave me out of it. See, when we had, back in the old days, when people went to school and learned something, I remember my cousin Susan, and she died last year, so a wonderful, wonderful person, absolutely wonderful person, loved her. I remember she told me that this, I'm going back, believe it or not, I'm really going back 60 years, folks. 60 years. She was taking a course in home economics. She was older than I was. I didn't say 60, maybe 58 years. She was taking a course in home economics. I said, damn, that's such a big word, home economics. I thought this, I didn't know what this is. It's like a scientific thing, you know? And when I realized, I always remember that. I remember passing by the school that she went to, which was a little different than down the road, a few streets away in Harlem, you know, than the school I went to. And I passed by, my mother would say, oh, you know, your cousin Susan, she goes to that school there. And she, my mother would point up, and I would look up the window. I said, oh, probably Susan's in that window there, you know, taking her home economics. Never knew what that meant. But back then, they had home economics. And what is that? That's how to take care of yourself. You know, there are people who've made a very, very good case for the fact that most families don't need two incomes. What we need to do is we need a manager of home, someone who understands home economics. You know, it really makes sense. In fact, one time I even saw this on TV, believe it, many, many, many years ago, where a person took a couple and said, give me all your expenses. And the husband and wife worked, and they had one or two kids or whatever. And then what the person did, you know, on a chalkboard, said, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to ask one of you, and we're going to ask, in this case, we're going to ask the woman to leave her job and stay home. And of course, there was panic. Oh, we can't afford anything. And then they went through how the day would unfold with the mother having her real job. Now, I'm not. This is not being condescending, folks. Believe me, the toughest job in the world is not managing a business; is managing a home. You know, a guy goes to work. He's a super manager or a supervisor of the department. That's garbage. That's easy. When you're home, you have everything. You're a finance manager. You're an inventory manager. You're a facilities manager, you're an accountant, you know, you're a psychiatrist, psychologist, you're everything. When a person stays home with children, you are everything. Everything imaginable that you can learn in school, you need to be a good homemaker. Think about it. You're raising children, the most precious commodity we have in the world, and you're home raising them. And yet, you know what we do? We get a job because we can't afford it. People have told us we can't afford to have one income, so I have to give my children, I have to give the responsibility of raising my children, the most precious commodity in the world, folks, to somebody that I don't even know and most likely will be closed down and may even abuse my kids. And I have no idea what they're teaching. Even the good ones, we have no idea what they're teaching our kids. And then I'll pick them up late at night. Now, if we had home economics, and we understood home economics, we realized that someone has to stay home. I know when I stay home, I become very economical. And I don't know what it is. I mean, you're there and you're doing things. You know, I revert back to the way we used to live back in the old days. You know, I put everything away, things I don't need, I give away, you know, tax write-off. I'm always thinking about, you know, how I live. I'm always doing things and making things better for the way I live. So my wife comes home, she doesn't have to do anything. Because I'm retired now, I have some time at home. And I wind up eating at home, doesn't cost hardly anything. I mean, I can eat at home for practically nothing. You know, I watch which lights are on, which lights are off. I watch the electricity, you know, I watch everything. Everything that's going on. I recycle stuff, you know, I make sure that let me tell you how infinite you can get with this. When you throw something in the garbage, you make certain that you break up the box so it's perfectly flat so it takes up no room. You know why? Because you don't want to use an extra garbage bag. You want that garbage bag to last 3 cycles. In other words, every third time you're going to put the garbage out. Because if you put it out every time the garbage man comes out, that's 3 garbage bags. They're getting expensive. I mean, you start doing things like that. I know what you're thinking. Now, you're thinking, well, this is stupid. What is he talking about this for? Because if we all became responsible at home. Now, if you had someone at home and you had a good finance manager at home, you wouldn't be going out buying a $475,000 house when you have one income of $36,000. Because you'd have somebody who's your finance manager at home, watching the kids, balancing the checkbook, watching the credit cards, watching all of this. And one of the main solutions to the economic malaise that we are in the United States today is to restore home economics. Basic, simple, not collectively, we have to do something. We stay home. We eat better. We eat more nutritiously. Our medical bills are lower. We're not running around. We don't have 2 cars. We don't have all that garbage. And when a person is home, that's their responsibility. If you can't afford a house, you don't buy a house. You have an apartment. If you have an apartment, you have one next to a bus stop so you can take a bus somewhere. I mean, the list goes on. It's infinite. The list cannot be finite. It is absolutely infinite what you can do. And that could change the face of America. Remember when I read to you what happened, how people lived in 1909? They had nothing. Absolutely nothing. And I've said this before. In the Depression of 1939, most people didn't know there was a Depression because they always lived that way. We have to revert back to home economics if we want to save this country. And start thinking. And stop running around and giving our children to somebody else. So they can brainwash them, so they can become subjects of the state. Wards of the state, as they are now. And that gets me angry. Very, very angry. Well, folks, this is the end of today's broadcast. I'd like to thank Ranch Shakers Audiology for their financial support, and we'd like to thank you for listening in. You can further the cause of liberty by recommending this program to your friends and let us hear from you. Our email address is comments@libertytalkradio.com. Remember, you're either allowing your liberties to be taken away or you're striving to protect them. Unfortunately, there's no middle ground. Folks, freedom is like riding a motorcycle. You feel free, liberated, your life is in your own hands, but with that freedom comes responsibility and risk. The government is like training wheels. They control your ride and every move. Ron Paul has a sign that says, don't steal. The government hates competition. With that, until next time, I'm Joe Cristiano. This is Liberty Talk Radio. Stay well. Stay tuned.